enter into the eternal divine order of God, to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires. And may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So I want to take up in September the 16th, 1925. Jesus was always the same in his pains. Now, one of the things that Jesus is going to tell us now is one of the signs of a saint. And that is, they're not up and down. They're not explosive one minute and then patient on another. No, there's an evenness right across the board. Okay, so Louisa said, my days are more bitter because of the long privations of my sweet Jesus. His will alone is left to me as a precious inheritance of the many visits that he made to my poor soul. And now I have been left alone, forgotten by the one who formed my life. So much so that it seemed to me, this is the first time that Louisa actually acknowledges something that Jesus has already said about her, and that is that they have already reached inseparability. This is her first time to acknowledge it, that it seemed to me that we were fused together, and that neither could he be without me, nor I without him. Now, I want to give you a couple of scriptures, because the scriptures are all over the place here. First of all, I want to give you, for the privations, Philippians chapter 1, verses 20 to 26, where you have Paul dealing with the same problem. He couldn't be without me, nor I him. I want to give you John 14, 20 to 21. You in me and I in you, both completely one. And so Louisa continues, and while I think, where did the one go who loved me so much? What have I done that he has left me? Now, she deals with this so frequently that you just wonder, you know, my temptation is to say, Louisa, will you get a mirror? You're telling the same thing over and over and over again. And the Lord has told her ad nauseam that he cannot leave her because they are, in fact, inseparable. Okay. But she doesn't get it because in her mind, she wants to see him, not just experience him in her heart and in her soul. She actually wants the visitations she's had before, and she's not willing to let it go. I find that rather interesting in somebody advanced in divine will. Ah, Jesus, she says, come back, for I can take no more. Now, she's demanding the visual that she has had before. And while I would like to abandon myself to sorrow and think of my great misfortune of having lost the one in whom I had enclosed all my hopes and all my happiness, the holy divine will imposes itself on me. Now, this is very interesting. Notice, I would have liked. And then, because she's in this state in which she is completely given to the divine will, and the divine will is reigning in her, he can impose his will on her. So he imposes himself on her, making me follow the course of my acts in his adorable will. Now, what you're getting here is regardless of how I feel, whether I'm sick or well, whether I'm sad or happy, whether I think things are going my way or not, I am being told to continue on an even path with all my prayer and intercession. I don't do it just because I like it, and I don't stop because I don't feel like it. And she says, the divine will almost prevents me from grieving more for being without my only good. So the divine will doesn't want her indulging in grief and sorrow. And she's done quite a bit of that in the volumes up to now. He's all the time, he's pushing her higher and higher to be like Jesus in everything. So she said, I remain as though petrified, intrepid. That means she will persevere regardless, all alone, without the slightest comfort either from heaven or from earth. A very important thing you'd need to put in the margin there is crucified in the divine will. It's not the way human nature wants to go. One of the things that is very clear when you read the Gospels is that Jesus could not be provoked by the scribes and the Pharisees and the Herodians and the priests and the Sadducees, who tried to get him to do this, that and the other. No matter what they did, no matter what provocation he was given, either during his ministry or during his passion, they could not get him to do something he didn't want to do. And they could not get him to say something he didn't want to say. He was sovereignly free. And this is where we're going in divine will. We have to become completely free. First of all, free of ourselves, free of the world, free of the influence of the evil one, so that we can, in fact, give a very pure, very holy adoration to God and service to God. So, Louisa continues, while I was in this state, I was thinking about various pains of the Passion of Jesus. So she herself is in pain and in a crucified state. She would naturally think of the crucifixion of Jesus. And Jesus said, my daughter, in all of my pains, I was always the same. This is terribly important. I never changed. Watch this now, because he's the model. My gaze was always sweet. Oh dear, when things go against us, we can show in our eyes and in our facial expressions that we do not like it one little bit. Thank you very much. My gaze was always sweet. My face was always serene. Now you get that so frequently in the hours of the Passion that no matter what they did to him, he was always serene. And it was one of the reasons why the people torturing him blindfolded him, because they couldn't take that incredible gaze of love. He said, my words were always calm. So none of this excited stuff when you're upset. My words were always calm. And they were always dignified. Now here you see somebody in complete control of their own being and completely expressing the will of God for us. This is loving your neighbour as yourself at a level that we can hardly understand. It's fantastic. In my whole person, I had such equality of manners. This is the spiritual balance inside of us. That if they had wanted to recognize me as their Redeemer, merely by the way of seeing me always the same, always balanced, they would have recognized me. It's true that as they continued on in the Passion, my pains were so many as to eclipse me. In other words, Jesus looked ugly on the outside because of what they did to him, but internally he was always the same. Unfortunately, human beings look at the outside. So it's true that my pains were so many as to eclipse me and surround me like many clouds, but this says nothing. after the heat of the pains, I would reappear in the midst of my enemies like a majestic sun. And that's what Louisa says several times in the Hours of the Passion. I would appear among them with my usual serenity and with the same manners, always equal and always peaceful. There's an extraordinary picture. Now, considering that he's tortured almost beyond recognition. To be always the same is only of God. Human nature is not expressing itself. To be always the same is how you recognize the true children of God. There's your model. There's your model. The way that is always equal to itself, this is this fantastic balance in your emotional life, your mental life, your spiritual life, your physical life, this complete balance. The way that is always equal to itself impresses the divine character on the soul and reveals the operating of creatures as pure. Now, pure means not mixed with anything else, and very particularly not mixed with self, not mixed with any selfish motivations or attitudes, and not mixed with self-will. So it's pure and holy. And therefore, pure and holy, it's worthy of God. Let me give you there Hebrews 12:14 that I've given to you so often. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. On the other hand, a changing character of the creatures, now we're going to talk about how the flesh reacts, is a sign of passions that roar within the human heart, that tyrannize it in such a way as to show an unpleasant character also on the outside. So what's screaming and roaring inside expresses itself on the outside. And it displeases everyone. I love the everyone. He doesn't say it displeases God. It displeases everyone you live with as well. Because you know yourself that when people get angry and upset and everything, it doesn't please anybody. It displeases everyone, he says. Therefore, I recommend to you that you be always the same. Now watch this. Always the same with God, with the Lord. In other words, you're not complaining and moaning and giving out and murmuring and blah, 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 like the Israelites did as they dragged their heels all the way through the desert. No. You're to be always the same with me, and always the same, as far as I'm concerned, is not my will, but thine be done. That has to be our motto. Or put it the other way, be it done unto me according to your word. But I think that not my will is helpful if you're on the way. It's all right for our Blessed Lady, she was there. I recommend that you all be always the same with me, always the same with yourself. That's very interesting now. That you're not allowing yourself, even in your private moments, to have any outbursts. And very often that problem is in your mind, where you allow thoughts to run all over the place in your mind, and you may think, oh, well, it's not affecting anybody else. It is. It's affecting everybody. You have to be always the same with me, with yourself, and with others. This is very interesting. But it is a fact that if you have conquered yourself to the point where there is balance emotionally and spiritually there, when others provoke you, you will not give an unbalanced reaction. I remember seeing a sticker on the back of a car one day, and it read, "You hit me, I hit you." There's the world. Anger for anger. Displeasure for displeasure. Hatred for hatred. Reaction for reaction. That's not of the kingdom, and it's most definitely not in the divine will domain. And Jesus said you're to be always the same, even when you are in pain, and even in my very privation, Now, you go back to the beginning of this message, and she said, I wanted to feel such and such, but the divine will imposed itself. And so Jesus is saying that he doesn't want her moaning about her privations, even though he himself acknowledges that it is a martyrdom for her. He says, the unchanging character must be indelible in you. The immutability of God touching the creature. And even though the pains of my privation knock you down and form the clouds of sorrow inside and outside of you, your unchanging manners will be light, which will dispel these clouds and will reveal how, though hidden, I always dwell in you. Jesus says, if you give this response to absolutely everything, not only will everybody else know that God is living and working in you, but you yourself will acknowledge it as well. So I want to give you 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God and that God dwells in you? Now, in the next paragraph, the subject is, what is the message that silence gives? Silence can give many messages. And of course, it starts off with Louisa saying to Jesus, why aren't you talking, you know? After this, she said, I continue to think about the pains of the passion of my adorable Jesus with the nail of his privation in my heart. Now, notice how quickly she obeys. She has been told to keep this balance there. And she goes ahead and continues her meditations, regardless of the nail, as she calls it, in her heart. And my beloved Jesus made himself seen in my interior, all taciturn and so afflicted as to arouse pity. Now, this is our 18th volume. So we should know why he is like this. But Louisa asks him why he is like this as if it has never happened before. She's living so completely in the present moment, she doesn't realize she's asked this 50 times before. And she said, my love, why are you so silent? It seems to me that you don't want to tell me anything anymore. I love the way she says things like that, and he's revealing things to her all the time. Nor do you want to confide your secrets or your pains any longer. And Jesus, all goodness but afflicted, told me, my daughter, being silent expresses something greater than speech. Think about that one. I've told many people over the years that my preferred experience is the sound of silence. Absolutely love it. It's totally profound. You can enter into the very heart of the universe and feel it one with God and with the whole of creation and absolutely the whole of humanity at a level that they wouldn't understand. So being silent expresses something greater than speech. To be silent is A, the decision of one not wanting to be dissuaded keeps silence. So this is very particular to the relationship between Jesus and Louisa. He said, I don't want to be dissuaded, so I don't speak, don't tell you. And if I don't tell you, then you can't fight me, you see. Secondly, it's the silence of a father with a beloved son of his, while in the midst of other unruly sons. Now, the beloved son, of course, is Louisa, and the unruly ones are the ones outside. And it is a sign that he wants to strike the perverted ones. Now, he's been telling her this since volume one. Well, maybe not volume one. I'll try volume two on it. He's been telling her that if he comes to her silent and taciturn, it's because justice is operating in the world. And when he leaves her in the privations, that exactly is the explanation as well. But she comes back to it time out of number, not really accepting it. Do you think it's nothing that I don't come to you and that I'm sparing in sharing my pains with you? Ah, my daughter, it isn't nothing. On the contrary, it's something very great. As I do not come to you, my justice comes filled with scourges in order to strike man. So much so that all the past evils, earthquakes, wars will be nothing compared to the evils which will come. This is 1925, and the evils that are coming is World War II initially and World War III, which is on the way. We're looking at the first rumblings of World War III at the moment. So it'll be nothing by comparison with the evils that will come and to the Great War. The Great War was World War II, and the revolution that they are preparing. Sins are so many that men do not deserve that I share my pains with you, and in order to free them from the scourges that are deserved. So she wants to query why, and she has said it to him, you're not sharing anything with me anymore. And he said, but people don't deserve it. I'm not going to make you suffer for no reason. They don't deserve it. So that means this is only 1925. I can't imagine what he would say today. Therefore, he said, have patience. My will make up for my visible presence in you. Because the divine will is the essence of God. Even though I remain hidden in you. One of the things we need to wake up in the world today is that God is present, but hidden. Satan is present, but hidden. And there's a very powerful remnant in all countries that I know of, present, but hidden. The whole spiritual warfare that's going on in the world today is under the radar. Take note. It's extremely important, the task you have in participating on God's side. So he said, I'm present, but I'm hidden inside of you. And if it were not so, he said, you could not have kept up the pace of doing your usual rounds in my will. You just absolutely couldn't. It is I who, though hidden, do them within you. You know the story of the footprints? Yeah, she's being carried. And you follow the one whom you do not see. I want to give you Revelation 14:4, that we follow the Lamb wheresoever he goes. However, once my justice is completed in fulfilling the scourges, I will be with you like before. Therefore, wait for me, Isaiah 40:31. Wait for me and don't fear. He's now going to show her what's coming. So I want to give you Amos 3:7, that the Lord doesn't do anything without telling the prophets first. While he was saying this, I found myself outside of myself in the midst of the world. In almost all nations, one could see preparations for war. This is only 1925. And they were already preparing for war. I challenged somebody the other day to go on Wikipedia and look for World War I. And when you go down through that, look for World War II. And when you go down through that, look for World War III. Wake up. They're preparing for war. I could see preparations for war. I could see new, more tragic ways of fighting. So she saw new weapons of war, which of course they used in World War II, which struck fright at the mere sight. And then the great human blindness, which, becoming yet more blind, acted like a beast. Whoops. Now, that blindness was prophesied in Isaiah 6:9-10. The people would be so blind that they would see and see and never see. They would hear and never understand. Because they had blinded their eyes and shut their ears for fear that they would hear. But they didn't. Their hearts became like stone. And when human beings become like stone, they actually become like beasts. Now, what you mean by beast is a ravenous beast. And I want to give you Revelation 13 for that. We'll be visiting that in 2 days' time. And the behavior that was done in the concentration camps in the Second World War was certainly beastly. They will behave like a beast, not like a man. And because it was blind, it could not see that in wounding others, it also wounded itself. Whenever we sin against others, we sin against ourselves also. Then, all frightened, Louisa said, I found myself back inside of myself, all alone, without my Jesus. Now, he's told her she's inseparable with him. And with the nail in my heart that the one whom I loved had departed from me, leaving me alone and abandoned, which is absolutely not true. It's just where she's at in her feelings. It's not fact. And while I was raving and agonizing because of the pain, my sweet Jesus moving in my interior and sighing because of my hard state said, my daughter, calm yourself, I am with you. I do not leave you, Joshua 1:5. And besides, how can I leave you? Look, my will is everywhere. If you are in my will, I do not know where to go, nor do I find a place which I could move away from you. He's told her this many times. I would have to render my will limited and gather it in one point in order to leave you, but I can't do that. My immensity extends everywhere and my nature renders all that belongs to me immense. So you can't just dwindle it down. Therefore, my will is immense, my power, my love, my wisdom, everything, all my attributes are immense. So how can I leave you if I find you everywhere in my will? Therefore, be sure that I do not leave you and plunge yourself ever more deeply into the immensity of my will. So let's go on to October the 1st, 1925. And the heading is actually quite important. The divine will is the center of the humanity of Jesus. One who lives in the divine will actually lives in the center of the humanity of Jesus. That heading deserves a little bit of thought. Louisa said, I was accompanying the pains of the passion of my sweet Jesus according to my usual way, and I offered the very privation of him and the torture it caused me as attestation of my sorrowful love. Okay, 10 out of 10 for that. And also for his relief and as compassion for his pains. So she's now giving a very good response. Now, while I was doing this, my beloved good moved one arm within my interior, raising his right hand and letting rivulets of blood and of light flow from his fingers over my poor soul, which was withered and burned by the powerful blowing of his privation, and with such sadness that Jesus himself was shaken. And he was moved to compassion, wanting to cheer me, and he said, my daughter, courage, do not fear. All over the Bible, 365 times, God tells us not to fear. One who lives in my will is in the center of my humanity. That means the fish is living in the center of the water. But if you ask the fish, where is the ocean? It mightn't be able to answer it, even though it cannot live outside of water. And we have Louisa here living in the center of the humanity of Jesus, thinking that he has left her. It's amazing. One who lives in my will is, notice the is, in the center of my humanity, because the divine will is in me like the sun within its own sphere. There's these two natures, human and divine. Even though the rays of the sun invade the earth, it never departs from up high, from its center. It remains always encircled within its sphere, in its majestic throne. And while its light reaches everywhere, dominating everything, everything serves as its footstool, as all await its beneficial light. Such was my will within me, like the center in the sphere of my humanity. And from my sphere, light originated. Put a little bit of English on that one. Where did light originate? He said, from me. So now you need to go back to the book of Genesis. And you hear the words, let there be light. God said, let there be light. Well, Jesus is God. Look at this. And from my sphere, the light originated, reaching everyone and every place. This had been the first act of man to reject my supreme will. Therefore, it was appropriate that my humanity, the second Adam, would take the first step towards the divine will, centralizing this eternal will within me as the center of life, and bringing it to man once again through my life, my works, my pains, and so on, as we say in the liturgy, through him, with him, and in him. So through my life, my work, my pains, so that man might return to his creator, placing himself in the order in which he had been created. So the job we have to do is to let the Lord reorder us. That's reordering our intellect, memory, will, our hearts, our motivations, our desires, and the body will follow. Do you see then, my daughter, Jesus said, the soul who lives in my will is in the center of my humanity, and everything I did and suffered is all around her. It's there for her help. So if we're living in the center of Jesus, everything that he has done is available to us. If she is weak, the divine will administers strength, my strength, to her. If she is shaded, my blood washes her and embellishes her. My prayers sustain her. My arms hold her tightly and cover her with my works. That's one of the sentences you need to take out of the book and write it somewhere where you can really remind yourself of it. In sum, everything is for her defense and help. Now, he tells us all over these writings that everything he did in redemption was for our healing, our help, our encouragement, to get us on the road, to get us going to heaven. It's all helping us. This is why the thought of my pains is as though natural to you. Because since you live in my will, these pains and everything else that Jesus did surrounds you like many clouds of light and of grace. Within the sphere of my humanity, my will placed my works, my steps, my words, my blood, my wounds, my pains, and everything I did as though on the way in order to call man and to give him sufficient aids and means to save him and to make him come back again into the womb of my will. If my will had wanted to enter the field on its own in order to call man, he would have been frightened, because we were down far too low on the level of the flesh. Instead, he said, I wanted to call him with everything I did and suffered, like many enticements, pushes, encouragements and means to make him return into my arms. So everything I did and suffered is the carrier of man to God. That's beautiful. And what I want to give you there is John 1:51, the stairway to heaven. Everything I did and suffered is the carrier of man to God. Now, one who lives in my will, by living in the center of my humanity, takes all the fruits of everything I did and suffered. We have to make sure we do actually take them. And we have to make sure that we actually enter the order of creation. And my will fulfills in him the full purpose for which he was created. Isn't it wonderful? Others then, who do not live in my will, find the means to be saved, but don't enjoy all the fruits of creation and redemption. So we're in a very privileged position. While my beloved Jesus was saying this, Louisa said, I said to him, my love, I don't know. You tell me that I live in your will, and then you leave me. And what a hard martyrdom you make me go through. As you leave me, everything changes for me. I myself no longer recognize myself. Everything dies in me. The light dies, the love, the good. You alone maintain the beating of life in this poor soul. Now, I want to give you John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. Now, Louise is in a very special position, that her very living, even physically, is a miracle. And so as Jesus withdraws his obvious presence from her, she notices that all her ability to live also goes. So I can't be hard on her then in maybe saying she shouldn't be calling on him so much to come back. She has to, because her very life depends on it. She says everything dies. See then in what a hard and painful condition you leave me. Now, he has told her in a couple of volumes before this that she is experiencing a process of dying and rising and dying and rising all the time, which is her incredible intercession for the human race, to try and get the human race to rise in the divine will. Oh, please have pity on me, she said, and don't leave me any more, for I can take no more. And while I wanted to say more, Jesus, sighing, added, My daughter, be quiet, don't go on any further. Your words wound my heart. Because he's living within her, he feels it all. Oh, how I would like to remove from your heart this nail which is so difficult, that I might leave you. I too know that for one who loves me, this nail is unbearable. Now, I take it as read that none of us are at the level that Louisa is at. But could you live without him? No. You couldn't. Life would have no meaning without him. It's all about him. And once we have learned in any way to love him, that's it, you're spoiled for life. Nothing else will ever fill that gap. Nothing. He alone can fill it. So there's a sense in which, you know, I understand what Louisa is saying. So Jesus said, I know too that for one who loves me, this nail is unbearable. It kills one continuously without pity. Therefore, lay down the thought that I might leave you. You should be convinced that instead of leaving you, I in fact penetrate more deeply into you and I remain silent in the little ship of your soul. Now, there's a big revelation. Big, big revelation. Just as the Lord stays continuously with us, absolutely hidden in the Eucharist, unrecognized by most. In the same way, he's hidden in the depths of our being. And the more we go towards complete union with him, the more that presence is there. But for most of us, it's hidden. Very few people, let me start this differently. The saints tell us that there are two major routes to God. One is, you know, visions and revelations and the Lord's visitations and he talks to you and all the rest of it. That's called the way of light and it's the most dangerous because there's lots of temptations and Satan can really trip you up. The other one is the way of darkness. It's the darkness of pure faith. You're not getting visions, you're not getting revelations. You're not getting anything that appears special to you or anybody else, but it's the safe path. And it's the path that's given to 9 out of 10 of those who follow the Lord. It's the safe path. And what the Lord does is he penetrates deep into the very depths of our being. And we know he's there. And yet at the same time, we can be questioning it. It's really incredible. Just let him be taken away and you'd know what an unfathomable emptiness had entered your being. I remain silent in the little ship of your soul. That's beautiful. And that little ship is travelling on the great waters of the divine will. So I want to give you Mark 4, verses 38 to 40. And this is so true, he said, that nothing has changed, nothing has moved within you. The preparations that are there are still there. Everything is in order, so much so that it's enough for my will to want it. And I give a little spin to the preparations that are there and I'm quickly with you. And besides, how can I leave you? One who does my will and lives in it, watch this, maintains the bonds of creation that exist between the creator and the creature. They maintain the bonds of redemption and the bonds between the sanctifier and those who are being sanctified. And you say to yourself, what bonds are these? My will seals all these bonds and renders the soul inseparable from me. Well, a bond is something that holds two things together. Therefore, he said, be sure that your Jesus doesn't leave you. But he has to explain the bonds. Now, while he was saying this, I saw as though many threads of light that bound my heart. Some of them were bound to all of created things. Others were bound to everything that Jesus did, which, of course, is creation and redemption. And others to the sacraments and so on, to sanctification. May everything be for the glory of God. Now, what he's talking about here is that when we enter into this inseparable union with Jesus. And we keep doing the prayers that he actually wants us to do and our responses. He makes these threads between us and creation. He's building all the time. And we know that every single act we do, he's building with it. It's really, really amazing. So let's start on October the 4th, 1925. This is an answer to the question, what does the I love you do for you? Are you just being childish and saying, I love you, I love you, I love you? So first of all, in the first paragraph, he's going to talk about how you grow spiritually and how you produce fruit. Very important. So Louisa said, I was fusing myself in the most holy will of God according to my usual way. And while going around in the divine will, I place my I love you upon everything. I wish that my Jesus would see or hear nothing but my I love you. And through this I love you of mine, and while repeating the sing song of my I love you, I thought to myself, it really shows that I'm a little child. I can do nothing but the little story of what she has learned. And then, what good comes to me by repeating I love you? I think this is one of the occasions where it's not Louisa's problem that the question is given to her so that she will answer a doubt for us. Why do I do all these I love yous? So what good comes to me by repeating I love you over and over again? But while I was thinking of this, my adorable Jesus came out from within my interior, showing my I love you impressed everywhere in all of his person. On his lips, his face, his forehead, his eyes, in the middle of his breast, on his back, on the back and in the centre of the palms of his hands, on the tips of his fingers, in some, everywhere. And with a tender tone, he said to me, my daughter, aren't you happy that none of the I love yous that came out of you got lost, but they all remain impressed in me? And then, do you know what good comes to you by repeating them? You must know that when the soul decides to do some good or to exercise a virtue, she forms a seed of that virtue. I love this now, this is gorgeous. By repeating those acts, she forms the water which to water the seed in the earth of her heart. And the more often she repeats them, the more she waters the seed, and the plant grows beautiful and green in such a way that it quickly produces the fruits of that seed. Galatians 5:22, fruits of the Spirit. On the other hand, if she is slow in repeating, many times the seed remains suffocated, if it comes out at all, or it grows thin and it never gives fruit. Poor seed, without enough water to grow. My son does not rise over that seed to give it fecundity, maturity, and a beautiful colour for its fruits, because it's not fertile. On the other hand, by always repeating those same acts, the soul contains much water with which to water the seed. My son rises over that seed every time it sees it being watered, and it delights so much knowing that it has much strength in order to grow and to make its branches reach up to me. And in seeing its many fruits, I pick them with pleasure. And watch this. I rest under its shadow. Wow. You go to the scriptures. And from Genesis, people rest under the shadow of great trees, you know, in the hot country and so on. If you go to Psalm 57, verse 1, shelter under the shadow of my wings. If you go to the gospel, Jesus said, I wanted to gather you as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But in the divine will, for somebody who is putting their I love you on the whole of the universe and into all of redemption and sanctification, Jesus says that the divine will rests in your shadow. That's amazing. I want to give you the teaching we've just read in a little rhyme that you probably know about because I learned it when I was a child. And the rhyme is, sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. They've known always, that one act doesn't make you patient or kind. It doesn't bring you to the fullness of love. One act doesn't do it. It requires many acts. And those many acts have got to become a habit if a character is to be produced. And when this character full of grace and virtue is produced, then you have a destiny in heaven. Wonderful destiny. Okay. So they're the repeated acts. So in the next paragraph then, Jesus speaks about if we continue giving our I love yous, that the tree of the divine will grows in us. It's beautiful. So repeating your I love you for me procures for you, one, the water with which to water and form the tree of love. Now this is very important because God is love. The kingdom of God is a kingdom of love. The only thing you can take from the earth, the only baggage allowance, is love. You will be judged on love, Matthew 25. And the only thing you can take into heaven is love. Therefore, a tree of love has got to actually grow in us and produce the fruits of the Spirit. Otherwise, we're not recognizable as citizens of heaven. So repeating your I love you procures for you the water with which to water and form the tree of love. Number two, repeating patience waters and forms the tree of patience. Number three, to water and form the divine and the eternal tree of my will. This is extremely important. If you have your book in front of you, please colour this. Nothing can be formed with one single act, but with many and repeated acts. And the example I would give you there is knitting a jumper. One stitch won't make the jumper. It requires thousands of them. And you have to get many, many, many stitches just to get the sleeve. And it takes perseverance for you to put that jumper together, stitch by stitch by stitch. Nothing can be formed with one single act. Only your Jesus has the power of forming all things and the greatest things with one single act because he has the creative power. But the creature or the individual person, by dint of repeating the same act, forms the good that she wants to do bit by bit. Now, the other example that men would probably prefer is that you build a house brick by brick. One brick won't do the house. So, she has to do it bit by bit. Fourthly, through habit, that good or that virtue becomes her nature. That means the habit creates a character and the character creates a destiny. Through habit, that good or that virtue becomes her nature and the soul becomes the possessor of it. And it forms all of her fortune. You have a destiny. And he says, this happens also in the natural order. So now he's going to explain it. He's going to give an example. No one becomes a teacher by having read vowels and consonants once or only a few times, but by repeating them constantly to the point of filling his mind, his will and his heart, so that that knowledge which is needed in order to be able to teach others. No one feels satisfied when they don't eat, bite after bite, the food that is needed in order to satisfy the body. No one harvests the seeds if he does not repeat who knows how many times his work in the field, and so with many other things. To repeat the same act is a sign that one loves, appreciates and wants to possess that very act in which he repeats. Therefore, repeat, 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 incessantly, 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 don't ever get tired. In this final section here, we're going to look at Jesus' prayers, acts, everything he has provided for us that we can use in intercession for others. Afterwards, I found myself outside of myself, and my sweet Jesus carried me around through all those places in which, while being on earth, he had operated, suffered, prayed, and also cried. So now she bilocates to Israel. Everything was there and in act, everything that he had done. And my beloved good said to me, "My daughter, daughter of my supreme volition, my will wants to make you take part in everything. Everything you see are all the works that I have done while being on earth, which my will keeps suspended within itself, because souls don't want to dispose themselves to receive them, partly because they don't know what I've done. See, number one, here are the prayers that I did at night, covered with bitter tears and with ardent sighs for the salvation of all. They're all in waiting to give themselves to creatures in order to give them the fruits that they contain. Daughter," he said, "enter into them, cover yourself with my tears, clothe yourself with my prayers, so that my will may accomplish in you the effects which are in my tears, prayers, and sighs." Now, won't that make prayer an awful lot easier? To enter into the prayers of Jesus and just echo his prayers to the Father. Not only that, he said, "My will keeps, as though lined up within itself, the pains of my childhood and all of the interior acts of my hidden life, which are prodigies of grace and of sanctity. All the humiliations, glories, and pains of my public life, and the most hidden pains of my passion." Now, this is what Jesus went to great trouble to reveal to Louisa, so that the rest of us would be able to move in there and touch them and make them available for others. "Everything is suspended," he said. "The complete fruit has not been taken yet by souls. And I am awaiting for the ones who will live in my will so that they may no longer be suspended." That means everything we've just been saying. "But they may pour themselves out upon the souls living in my will to give them their complete fruit. Only the ones who must live in my will make my goods no longer be suspended. Therefore, enter into my every act and pain, that my will may be fulfilled in you." That is, completely. "Between you and me, I do not want suspended things." And watch this now. If you have your book with you, this definitely needs to be coloured. "Nor do I tolerate being unable to tell you what I want. This is why I want to find my own will in you, so that nothing may oppose what my will itself wants to give you." And while Jesus was saying this, I moved from one act of Jesus to the other. Notice her immediate obedience. "And I remained as though transformed, covered with his own acts, prayers, tears, and pains. Who can say what I experienced? I hope the blessed Jesus will give me the grace to respond and to fulfill his adorable will in me and in all. Amen." So that's what we're doing for tonight. But please do enter into the prayers and the acts and the intercessions of Jesus as he has described here in his infancy, his childhood, his public life, his passion, death, resurrection. Bring it all to fruition in the divine will. So thank you for listening, and I'm glad we're back sharing again. God bless.